Three Little Words was recorded in 1930 by the Rhythm Boys, with Bing Crosby, as it happens, accompanied by Duke Ellington's orchestra. Ethel Waters sang the tune the next year, Ella did so 10 years later. Three Little Words, in this case, I love you. In our case, it seems so different. Our Three Little Words, the room changed, the room changed. The song anticipated a life-changing event, perhaps the response to a question asked implicitly, with the hope of a response, I love you, that would bring the singer alive. And that's a key to our Three Little Words, and we'll learn why in this foundational story Bill Carter tells about his mother. He writes, the Latonia Theater was buzzing that Thursday in Oil City, Pennsylvania. Betsy fidgeted in her balcony seat. For the first time, she was going to hear a concert by the legendary jazzman, Louis Armstrong. Her Aunt Mamie had bought 2 balcony seats for them to celebrate her 19th birthday. Betsy didn't know much about Louis or his music, but her family had listened to plenty of jazz on the family radio and phonograph. After the crowd filled the hall, the announcer introduced Louis Armstrong and his all-stars. Barney Bigard on clarinet, Trummy Young on trombone, Billy Kyle on piano, Arbel Shaw on bass, Barrett Deems on drums, and the formidable Velma Middleton on vocals. The band kicked into their theme song, When It's Sleepy Time Down South, and a cheer went up from the audience. Music filled the hall and the crowd began to sway. When Trummy Young stepped up to blow a trombone solo, everybody cheered, so he dug in harder. Bigard's clarinet performed tricks that Betsy, an all-state clarinetist in high school, could not even have imagined. But the best part of the show was Louis Pops Armstrong, with his effervescent smile and boundless musical energy. The man created joy. And the audience wouldn't let him stop. To this day, Betsy vividly remembers 2 things about the show. First, there was a stack of folded handkerchiefs on the top of the piano. As Armstrong blew his trumpet, his brow began to glisten. Drops of hard-earned perspiration were visible from the balcony. Pops frequently took a handkerchief from the stack, mopped his scalp, and dropped it on the floor of the stage. Soon he would grab another handkerchief, wipe his brow again, and drop it on the floor. The second thing Betsy remembers is what Pops did to that room. The excitement was palpable. You could taste the joy in the air. All 1,600 seats were full, quite a feat for a Thursday night in northwestern Pennsylvania. And by Betsy's description, everybody in that auditorium was thoroughly, completely alive. The opening story of a new book, Thriving on a Riff, Jazz and the Spiritual Life, by William G. Carter. Carter has been on a quest to understand, at their very roots, those three little words, the room changed. The room came alive as Louis Armstrong blew vitality into the room through his trumpet, and Carter's deep exploration ultimately tells us much about what it means to be human, and how we might choose to live, especially in our times. Bill Carter has a dual career as a jazz pianist and Presbyterian minister. He is the pastor and head of staff at the First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit and leader of the jazz ensemble, the Presby Bop Quartet. He is a composer and author of 11 books and regular guest on WVIA's Art Scene. April Mix's Memory and Desire, as the poet T.S. Eliot wrote, this poignant springtime theme will be explored by the Presby Bop Sextet in a musical celebration for Jazz Appreciation Month on Sunday, April 21st at 4 at the First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit. The music will feature compositions by Bill Carter and arrangements, and by Bill's mentor, Al Ham, in memory of Al's passing in September 2023. The concert is also a launch event for Bill's new book, Thriving on a Riff, Jazz and the Spiritual Life. Reverend Bill Carter returned to the WVIA studios to talk with us about Thriving on a Riff and its roots in his early life.
I've been tinkering away at writing a book and also composing more music while I have my day job as a pastor. And so what the journey has been about and continues to be about is integration and empowerment. And integration, holding together things that might seem disparate, but weaving them together, finding the common ground, the overlap, listening to how the disciplines may speak to one another. And empowerment, how to do this, not just as a intellectual exercise for myself, but something that lifts people's spirits, taps their souls in a way that they can resonate with what I'm trying to do, and do this in a non-sectarian, loving, justice-informed way. There it is. And so I am fortunate to have a day job where my good friends there empower me and encourage me and turn me loose. There's always a certain amount of paying the rent that comes along with a day job. But then this other piece that has been continuing to bubble up like a fountain. And it was there before the religious impulses were there. But now to think about how they might be woven together. And then revisiting my own journey, everything from the Fats Waller and Benny Goodman albums that my mom introduced me to her story about Louis Armstrong, working up perspiration and animating a crowd in a white town in the 50s, to what this might mean is I've created some friendships with outstanding musicians, both here in northeastern Pennsylvania and New York and beyond.
And it wasn't just your mom who gave you LPs. It was your grandmother who wrapped them in a brown paper bag.
Right. Two LPs by a bespectacled pianist named Dave Brubeck. And she expected I would know who that was when I was 11 or 13 or whatever it was. And she said, go home and listen to these. And, you know, I still really feel the emotion when I revisit that music. And particularly Brubeck's recording of Someday My Prince Will Come from his Dave Diggs Disney album, where they were having fun creating as they went. And they picked a tune that I thought was the most sappy, you know, emotional. I mean, this is the cartoon maiden scrubbing the stone steps as Prince Charming shows up. And I thought, yuck, you're going to make music out of that? And you could almost hear them laughing and dancing as they were co-creating this tune together. And I remember the emotion, I want to be about this. There's something here that gives me life, and if others knew about it, it might give them life. And then being raised in a family where music was always present, and if Count Basie or Woody Herman were bringing their big bands to my little town, which they sometimes did, we always went. We always took in the music. And the room changed. And that's what I wanted to write about. And I thought, that's, in a larger sense, what I want my life to be about. I don't want to be cloistered or hidden away or stuck in some concrete basement with a sticky floor playing jazz. I want to present an integrated life and model that for other people who often live in different cubicles in different places.
That phrase you just used, the room changed. That's something that your mother told you about.
Yes, yes. She was in a Louis Armstrong concert for her 19th birthday in Oil City, Pennsylvania, a Scots-Irish town with people of, let's just say they're well-starched, most likely a community that Mr. Armstrong could not spend the night in as an African-American in 1955, Western Pennsylvania. And yet he came and so immersed himself into the music that he was perspiring within 30 seconds. And then was dropping these handkerchiefs on the floor as he's mopping his brow. And my mother's assessment very simply was the room changed. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, it was as if we all left our troubles behind. We were all lifted. We're all part of this. And as I began to parse that experience a little bit and thought, well, in some of my reading in recently about cultivating anti-racism and what were the blind spots of my own privilege growing up, yeah, I realized, of course, he was probably in the town. If it wasn't officially a sundown town, it was pretty close. And that they were perceiving him as an entertainer who would come in and then leave on a Thursday night. And this was around the time everything was beginning to break. Emmett Till had been murdered, Brown versus the school board, you know, all of those things happening with civil rights. And thinking, I can't talk about jazz and the spiritual life in a cocoon. It has to be contextual. What's this life we're living? Where is the pain? Where is the redemption? Where is the healing? And I think so much of all of that is, well, I'm going to use a church word, incarnated in the music, embodied in the music. A lot of jazz has been created from human pain, and a lot of people have had their spirits lifted as they've heard jazz. You know, it's the whole thing. In my church work, I hear of these churches who will hire a bunch of guitar players and create a praise band. And I thought, you know, all right, I don't know if I want to give up singing in parts and the choral tradition such, but that seems really halfway, because praise without lament is incomplete, and you have to have both. You have to have the blues along with the hallelujahs. They belong together, just like the Book of Psalms. And I mean, in a time of a national controversy and division, I think what is set against one party versus another is the pain that they bear. And what's then proposed are extremely shallow answers to, well, long established issues. And until we address issues like racism, like poverty, like addiction, we're going to continue to languish and stay in the mud of our own making.
And how in our lives does, say, a wordless jazz concert, or maybe even with a vocalist, how are we taken where we don't want to go?
Well, we have to volunteer, I think, to take the trip. I had a little fun in the book. The last chapter is about eschatology, which is a 10-cent word for, you know, how everything ends up. And the story that I wrapped it in was the night my wife took me down to Reading as a birthday gift to hear a 4-hour concert by Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. And I loved it. And she was able to enjoy the first hour or so. And it did thin out a little bit as the night went on. But her question was, how long does this music go on? And I think the spiritual answer is forever. Forever. The songs of the saints will not cease. We'll all be caught up in this symphony, this sense of glory, this sense of harmony and rhythm. And every once in a while, we hear a little bit of that, or we get a glimmer of it, and it's communicated without words. That's interesting to me, that music can carry the weight of the spirit, the human spirit, the divine spirit, kind of the same way that sniffing cinnamon takes me back to a family kitchen. You know, it's instantaneous transport, and it often catches us unawares.
We know there are tremendous performers, and you and I have talked about it in the past, who have had addictions and ended their mm-hmm. lives yeah. much too soon. I don't necessarily mean taking it, but their lives
right.
have ended
yes.
too soon. And yet some of the times when they're alive and we have recordings, they're creating sublime music.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And again, to just reflect on this. Where do the addictions come from? Well, they come from repeated behaviors. Where do the behaviors come from? They come from pain and deprivation. And some of that, particularly during the 40s and the 50s, when the nightclubs and the environment in New York and other places was flooded with heroin and other self-medications, that it was a corrupted and easy environment to fall into that kind of slavery. That's what an addiction is. It's a slavery, and some of it comes from self-hatred, and some of it comes from a lack of discipline, and some of it comes because you don't know where else to turn. You don't have a safety net or a community of friends or supporters or a family that stands with you. And yet, you know, it doesn't ever quite kill off the creative spirit. You know, I think of Bill Evans, probably one of the finest pianists ever. And I know that a lot of musicians are a little wary of talking about addictions, and they think that's how they're often dismissed in public. You know, there go those terrible people with the bad habit. But Evans, even though the demons got most of him, or in the end, he could create chord voicings and sounds that chimed and resonated with the human spirit and the human heart. And they built community, and they brought people into the presence of beauty. And that's holy work. And I don't want anybody to dismiss that because it comes from a jazz musician. And that's what I'm trying to get at in this book. How do jazz musicians, in doing their work, how do they create beauty? How do they create authentic community? How do they stand up to pain and racism? You know, there's Charles Mingus. We had a conversation about him a few years ago when my band played his music. And he was standing up to the governor of Arkansas, Redneck, who was, you know, trying to keep the wrong kind of kids out of one of his schools. And Charles Mingus called him out, called him a fool. And Columbia Records didn't want the lyrics on his album, so they stopped the recording session. Yet he got the message across in other ways. And, you know, Brubeck canceling, you know, scores of concerts in 1960 because they wanted his brand new bass player to hide behind a curtain because of the color of his skin. And he said, no, I'm going to cancel. And this was a man who was shaped by his own family to see the inclusive power of love and the importance of justice. And he was going to take a stand about something he just thought was right. And those stories need to be told, and they need to offer a model for how we live, because the subtitle of the book, Thriving on the Riff, is Jazz and the Spiritual Life, not jazz and church and not jazz and religion. I'm not trying to necessarily put more people in the pews, although, you know, if you're listening, you ought to go. No, it's more, how about this life that we live, and how can it embody a certain kind of practical holiness and beauty, and particularly divine love?
And you used the word community, and we've talked about communion and community, communion mm-hmm. among, for example, mm-hmm. the members of your band.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's a tight-knit ensemble. And the Presby Bop bands, and there are more than one now. We have quartet, quintet, sextet, depending on, well, really the budget of the people who want us to play. But we are brothers. We are companions. We travel together in the same van. We're heading off to Florida soon for a little weekend of three concerts over 5 days, and all the logistics of that, and renting the VRBO and figuring out what music to play and what do we do in our downtime. And I will say, it is the first time our band will ever stay in a place that has a hot tub. So we'll see how that goes. You know, we travel like truck drivers. I mean, it just, no frills. But, you know, along the way, when I get into the van with the others in the band, we laugh, we tell stories. Late at night, as we have a long pause on the way back from someplace, we start to confess what's going on. We talk about our kids and their spouses and everything else. It's a deeply human communal time. And that shapes how and what we play when we go on the bandstand.
Complete trust, of course.
Yes. Well, mostly. I mean, the piano player in the band is a little flimsy, but the rest of them carry him pretty well.
Tell us about losing your dear friend Al.
Oh, my. Yeah, as I say in the jazz parlance, he took a cab, and that was last September, and it was time to go. It was extremely painful and continues to be really close to the surface. He told me that I was the first of his students to ever hire him, which I did as a college junior in the campus pub at Binghamton University. And I'd give him $50 and he'd come over in his shirt sleeves after teaching all day. And we'd play some jazz tunes, quartet tunes, to people who were imbibing and not listening. I mean, that's quite common in that environment. And from that point on, we had a bond. We had a bond. And, you know, the plateau difference between teacher and student melded. And in the end, in fact, we were recording one night at the WVIA studios. And as George was getting the piano, making sure the piano was tuned and dialing the knobs and such, Al said, you know, I can't play the music you're writing for me anymore. You've gone beyond my level. And I said, well, we'll dumb it down for you. And back and forth, we'd talk that way. And actually, one of the turning points in 2001, he offered me an evening at Binghamton University at the main stage, you know, 2,000-seat theater. He said, write some music. And so I wrote all the music for the evening, and we haven't played that since. And now that he's gone, this is what we're going to do on April 21st, 4 o'clock, First Presbyterian Church in Clark Summit. We're going to re-present a lot of that music, and I brought some of it for you to listen to and share with others. And with a sextet, and it's going to be both a tribute to Al and his memory and his influence on me, but also as a kind of a launch event for this book, in which he figures on almost every page, even if he's not named. You know, I have so many memories of him. We played one night in Binghamton, New York, with a big band, and wound up about 10 o'clock. Then got in his van, drove to southwestern Pennsylvania so that we would be there in time to play for a church service the next morning at 10. We shared a room in some mountain lodge somewhere, and he picked up Legionnaire's disease. Yeah, I laugh now, but this is the stuff that happens. I ended up driving him home. You know, we have these moments, and they come from close companionship.
What were the choices when you chose Thriving on a Riff? Did you know always that you wanted that as a title, or what?
Well, no. Actually, a lot of insight comes in the burst, a flash, explosion. Sometimes for me it comes when I'm in the shower and I have nothing to write down the idea with. So Thriving on a Riff is the title of a Charlie Parker tune, which is a contrafact. It's a melody based on the chords of another composition. In that case, I've Got Rhythm. So I thought, you know, that's kind of code language for this. I have to sometimes explain what a riff is. It's a repeated phrase, like the tune In the Mood. So it's that kind of repetition. And then to think about human thriving. What does it mean to thrive? What brings us alive? There's this great phrase from the early theologian Irenaeus, who said, the glory of God is the person who is completely alive. I think he was talking about Jesus, but he didn't narrow it down. He could be talking about us. What does it mean to be completely alive? How does music animate that, energize that, empower us, as I began? And that is something I think is worth exploring. And so my bag is music. Other people, you know, they might have gardening, or they might, you know, like to tinker with electrical events or electrical projects. I am married to somebody who loves handcrafts. And when I said goodbye today, she was knitting a sweater for a child. You know, how does all this fit into the life that brings us and others alive? And I wanted to write the book at two levels. For those who are traditionally spiritual, like myself, there's a lot of meat here, meat and potatoes. And for those who are a little suspicious of conventional religion or feel kind of worn out from it, there's a whole lot of other good stuff for them too. Again, it models a life without those kind of superficial distinctions. In fact, I have a chapter on what is secular and what is sacred, and I basically end by saying, if there's a line, it's a dotted line.
Now tell us, we get to come to this concert and experience this music that hasn't been performed since that occasion when Al called you to the main stage.
That's right. 22 years, we haven't touched any of it. We have a wonderful saxophonist from Syracuse, Joe Carello, who'll be playing alto sax, playing the Al part. And I met Joe in 1978. We were on an all-star band in upstate New York with Phil Woods as the guest soloist. In fact, Joe was so smart, he's grown out of his hair. And but I have a picture of him I'm going to show when I see him, of him with a curly afro. Jeff Stockham, my longtime companion friend from Syracuse, on trumpet and French horn. Tom Hamilton, the great local tenor saxophonist, will also pick up the flute. And then my favorite rhythm section guys from the Presby Bop band, Tony Marino on bass. George Graham calls him the ubiquitous Tony Marino. And then Ron Vincent from New York, the great drummer.
And you're going to sign some books, will you?
I think I'll sign some books if anybody wants them.
If we want a book and we're in Williamsport and can't make it?
You can go to Amazon, of course. I would prefer if you find a local bookstore to keep them in business, maybe order it from them. It's on Broadleaf Books, which is part of the 1517 media organization through the Evangelical Lutheran Church, kind of the pop label. You can always reach out to me at presbybop.com, and you'll find some links there too. In fact, we have a featured bookseller, a preferred bookseller, a guy named Byron Borger, who's from near York, Pennsylvania, and he has a book company called heartsandmindsbooks.com, and he's offering a 20% discount and shipping. I'm a big fan of supporting local commerce, local merchants. These are our neighbors, and they can be our friends.
Reverend Bill Carter, who has been a guest on Art Scene a number of times. He is a jazz pianist and a Presbyterian minister, the pastor and head of staff at the First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit, and leader of the jazz ensemble, the Presby Bop Quartet, and as we heard, Quintet and Sextet too. Carter will have his ensemble, the Sextet, performing on April 21st. It's titled Spring Can Really Hang You Up, and it's at 4 o'clock at the First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit, 300 School Street, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The music will feature compositions and arrangements by Bill Carter and Bill's mentor, Al Hamm. And Al passed away in September of 2023. We're hearing him here. The concert is also a launch event for Bill's new book, Thriving on a Riff, Jazz and the Spiritual Life, and he will be signing books at a reception following the concert. It's open to the public free of charge. A free will offering will be taken. For more information on the website of the church, fpccs.org, fpccs.org, First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit, those are those initials. And the concert will be live streamed. So if you are in Williamsport and other places around the globe and you can't get there, you can stream live online, and that's on the website, fpccs.org, fpccs.org. That's Sunday, April 21st at 4 o'clock at the First Presbyterian Church, 300 School Street in Clark Summit. And for more information, fpccs.org. And there will be a launch of Bill's book. We just heard about the new book, Thriving on a Riff.